And so what we see is our own Supreme Court, at least in the United States of America, now making rulings based on foreign sources of law. Global opinion on homosexuality is more important than what our founding documents say. Robert Bork wrote a book about this called Coercing Virtue, The Worldwide Rule of Judges. He says this is happening in almost every country. Another trend is the International Criminal Court. The International Criminal Court is sort of an interesting court. It's designed to try war criminals. The problem is you get into the International Criminal Court and it really doesn't have a lot of the protections that you find in the American Constitution. There's no burden of proof on the prosecution. There's no presumption of innocence. There's no right to an impartial jury trial. There's no right to a speedy trial, no right to an appeal. No right to protection against double jeopardy, meaning they can keep trying you for the same offense over and over again. No freedom from self-incrimination. No protection against cruel and unusual punishment. Why do we find these rights in the American system? Because the American founders looked at the Bible. In fact, the majority of their founding quotes come from the Bible. And the others they quoted after the Bible were steeped in the Bible themselves. So the Bible has within it certain rights for the dignity of man. And that was what was built into our system. Calvin Coolidge, one of our presidents, says, 1926, the principles which went into the Declaration of Independence are found in the sermons of the early colonial clergy. They preached equality because they believed in the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man. They justified freedom by the text that we are all created in the divine image. That's why we anchor our rights in God, not so the International Criminal Court. Another trend, very quickly, is regionalism. Regionalism is the idea that you take a bunch of similarly situated countries and you put them into one region. So in Europe, instead of individual European states, now what you have is one European currency, the euro, and you also have the controlling authority in Europe is Brussels over all of Europe. Well, what about the governments of the individual European states? Those are nothing more than debating societies. That's what I mean by regionalization. So eventually what I think is going to happen is you're going to have 10 of these regions throughout the world. One of them that I think is forming is what's called the North American Union, which conglomerates Canada, North America, and Mexico under one region. And the currency that will be used will be the Amero. You can read about it in this book that I have there by Jerome Corsi called The Late Great USA. And eventually you have 10 regions, sort of like Daniel with his 10 toes, right? And then you take all of these regions and you put them into what? One global umbrella. So regionalism is a stepping stone towards globalism. And this is one of the reasons I don't think, at least in America, our border is enforced. People come across the Rio Grande River almost at will. And I think the border is not enforced because the elites already look at America and Mexico as a single country. They just haven't implemented all the steps yet. And Mr. and Mrs. America, who still think nationally, are upset with this. They don't understand that their leaders think in a global paradigm, not a national paradigm. Another trend, very quickly, is unmanageable debt. That figures off. That's our debt clock. We're about $20 trillion in debt as a nation in the United States of America. How much is $1 trillion? You ever thought about that? Here's what a $100 bill looks like. Stack those up, and that's $10,000. Stack them up, that's what $1 million looks like. Keep on stacking, and that's what $100 million looks like. Now look at the original dollar bill down there, $100 bill. It's about the size of a man. Well, let's keep stacking, shall we? That's what $1 billion looks like. That's what $1 trillion looks like. Look at how big that is next to a truck. You see the man? You can hardly see him in the corner. And yeah, I can't even see the original stack of bills. I can hardly see him, and I can't see the original $100 bill. Can you? That's what it looks like next to a football field, a 747 airline jet. Well, let's keep stacking, shall we? There's 15 trillion, about half the size of our Statue of Liberty in New York. And actually, all of America's unfunded liabilities are 114.5 trillion, taller than our former Twin Towers that were knocked down on 9/11, taller than the Empire State Building. Look at the football field and the airplane at the bottom. You can hardly see it. And I realize I'm coming from an American point of view, but I've talked to many of you, and you say your government here is on the same spending spree also. Why are they doing this? One option is these people are totally crazy and insane. I'll buy into that. Can I give you another option, though? It's designed. They are deliberately trying to crash the world currencies of the world, or the national currencies of the world, so it can be replaced by a single currency, a global currency. The globalists don't like the idea of the dollar being the standard. We've got to bring that down. I found this interesting quote in the Telegraph. The UN wants a new global currency to replace the dollar. The dollar should be replaced with a global currency. The United Nations has said proposing the biggest overhaul of the world's monetary system since the Second World War. George Soros, the globalist, has said the same thing. We need an international accounting unit. See, all of these are trends that the devil is using to set the stage for world government. And what is happening, I believe, largely in America is what's called the Cloward and Piven strategy. Have you heard of this? These are two political scientists. It's a political strategy to overload the American public welfare system to the point that it creates a crisis. You see, they want a crisis because in the midst of a crisis, people call out for greater government control. It creates a crisis and bankrupts the nation, leaving the country no choice but to adopt a socialist or communist agenda. May I rephrase that a little bit? Leaving the countries of the world no choice but to adopt a one-world globalist or socialist agenda that controls human beings from cradle to grave. I've mentioned this before, is the new technology, I believe, is pushing us into world government. The world's getting smaller, isn't it? I've exchanged many emails with David, even though we're on different parts of the world. Isn't that interesting? Welcome to Utah, the data center, the new home for the NSA's exponential expanding information trove. The $1.7 billion facility, 2 years in the making, will soon host supercomputers to store gargantuan quantities of data from emails, phone calls, Google searches, and other sources. Since January 11, 2011, a reported 10,000 laborers have built four 25,000 square foot halls filled with servers and cables, plus an additional 900,000 square feet of space for technical support and administration. James Bamford, the author of Shadow Factory, said that the public has yet to grasp the significance of Utah's data mining. It's basically a hard drive. It's also a cloud, a warehouse. It'll be storing not just text and audio, but pictures and video. There's a lackadaisical attitude to this. The people pay no attention to it until it's too late. All of the makings for a surveillance society are already coming into existence. I mean, every tweet, every Google search, every email, every voicemail, every text is stored. Your profile is already generated.